Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, November 16th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. And these tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, and that's just the words, Start Here, in the upper left-hand corner of the webpage, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on it, it will let you download a completely free and private app. It contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process. And if you choose to download those and listen to them, sometimes repeatedly, it can serve as a powerful tutorial for you and help you get maximum benefits from the application of these tools in the minimum amount of time. We hope people do all of that soon and often because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives and relationships. It also tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, testimonials, and if you have any of those to share with us, please feel free to give us a call at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will be able to turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. Alternatively, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeanie at whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. If you send us a comment, a question, an answer, or a testimonial, we will address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notice about what day and time your comment was addressed, and you can go back in the archives and listen to it. The archives are a very powerful tool. It's another resource that's offered completely free. And for the past 11 and three quarters years, we've been doing shows. The first 8 years, it was 1 hour a day, 5 days a week. And for the last three and three quarters, it's been 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. And almost all of those shows are available in the archives. The only reason one wouldn't be available is because of a technical snafu. And I find great value in going back and listening to shows that either have special import or that I might have missed. And we offer that as part of what Michael and Jeannie do to keep this work available. Again, free of charge. And it's something that they pay to maintain for your benefit and theirs. So let us know how we can support you, what's on your mind, what you've been gaining from our work, whether it's listening to Michael's work in the second hour of the show or listening to this work we've been going through, The Way of Mastery, this year since January 10th. Every time we get a comment or a question, as we did a couple yesterday, it helps us make sure that we are keeping the focus of our discussion and our presentations and our questioning in line with what can be of most service to you. That's the intention with this work, is to be a service. And that is far easier to do when people let us know what they're dealing with, what they're struggling with, what they're succeeding with, what they may have questions about related to these tools, etc. Yesterday, when I posted the audio of yesterday's show, I was posting it to the MindShiftersAcademy.org website, where I'm editing out the first hour because it's specifically related to The Way of Mastery, and posting it on a special page on that website. And I was trying to figure out, what should I label this? And I ended up calling it a casual review, because the other reviews of the chapter of the lessons in Way of Mastery have been a rereading with commentary. And yesterday I did not read Lesson 29. I just did an overview from a flow of conversation, kind of that stream of consciousness stuff about the headings in Lesson 19 and some of the associations that arose when I was reading through it with commentary the day before. And we had our support group last night, and that went as well as can be expected. We did another segment of an hour of listening to the lectures by Michael Singer as he's lecturing about various topics from his book, The Untethered Soul. And I shouldn't be surprised anymore, because it's been happening for so long, so consistently, but it still surprises me how similar the messages are from one great teacher to another. The messages like what we find in A Course in Miracles and The Way of Mastery, and how almost identical, very, very close parallels, sometimes almost identical wording to what we get when we listen to someone like Michael Singer talk about the meaning behind the inspiration for, or the understanding underneath his, a book like The Untethered Soul. The challenge for most of us raised in the Western world for these great or these deeper spiritual teachings is the idea that all events are neutral. Again, last night in the support group, we had somebody say, well, so are you saying that if somebody has this or that diagnosis, we should just say that's okay? And let's say it's a cancer diagnosis, or it's an inoperable tumor, or it's a short lifespan. And the answer to that question from these great teachings is, yes, if it's happening and you want to be able to deal with it from your highest and best, it's essential that you say okay to it. It's happening. Let me embrace it. Let me trust that it's unfolding, so there must be some value in it. If no other value, then it's going to be a serious challenge to me to stretch to be able to stay loving in the face of this news, as this news interacts with all of my conditioning and labeling as of this thing as being bad or wrong or inappropriate. And that's all that's happening. When I generate a negative response to something that's in the flow of life, what's happening is all of the conditionings, all of the ways that I've been taught to think about life and myself and my life situation and how things should go is clashing with the flow of life. And, you know, if you're standing beside a river and the river is flowing and all of a sudden a strong wind comes up, and because of the flow of the river, some of the soil on the shore has been eroded away from the roots of a tree that's growing near the river, or that was growing for years before the river was there, and then years before there was a big storm and the river changed course, and now it's flowing very, very close to the tree. But you happen to be standing there on the banks of the river as a strong wind comes up, and because of the pressure of the wind and because of all the soil that's been eroded from the roots of the tree falls into the river. And now the flow of the river changes. Is that a bad thing? It's not a bad thing unless there's a human mind there observing it who decides to label it. It's just the flow of life. That is one way to look at everything that happens in the world and these deeper spiritual teachings, whether it's Joseph S. Benneth with The Impersonal Life or The Way of Mastery or A Course in Miracles or Byron Katie's work or Diedrich Wolzak's work. These deeper spiritual teachers, Thich Nhat Hanh and others, these different Krishnamurti, etc., all of these teachers have reached the awareness that to fight against the flow of life is not only futile, it is disruptive to your experience of life. It separates you from the flow. It creates your pain, your fear, your sadness, or it amplifies the pain and fear and sadness that's inherent in the experience of life, because life is change. Life is flow. Life is creation, which is always moving and changing. And the human mind and the thoughts that have been programmed into it, thoughts about how things should be and how you should be, that part of your mind, some call it the ego, some call it the intellect, it wants things to stay the same. So, we were having this question come up in the support group last night, as it comes up every once in a while in these groups. And there's quite an adjustment to be made from the way the standard Western mind, conscious, logical mind, egoic mind operates, in order to get that mind to learn to align with the flow of life, because that mind the intellectual mind, the egoic mind, defines itself from a pattern of thought that it wants to repeat and keep constant. And yet the flow of life, the only thing that's constant about the flow of life is that it's always changing. So hopefully you can see right there from direct basic observation that there's going to be conflict between the conscious logical mind and the egoic mind and the flow of life. So just think about it one more time. When the tree falls into the river, because the action of the river, the water in the river itself, has eroded the soil from the roots, and that combines with a stiff breeze that comes by, and the tree falls into the river, and now the river changes its flow because it's now got something to flow around that wasn't there moments before. Is that a bad thing? It's just a thing. It's a thing that was probably happening on this planet for thousands of years before there were humans to observe it. And before there was language to label it as good or bad, judge it as right or wrong. And therefore, in the judging and the separating oneself from the direct experience of life and the flow of life, creating tension, creating a false sense of experience of being separate from that flow of life. And this work is calling us to keep our energies focused on the tiny little bit of this creative flow, the mind energy that we get to direct, and just become more and more vigilant and aware of what we do with the little bit of creative flow that we are given dominion over. Each of us gets to choose where and how he or she focuses their conscious awareness in each new present moment. And it is the focus of that awareness and your conscious awareness which creates your experience of life. And if you forget that, if you have yet to be introduced to that, if you let the conditioning which says, this is bad, this is wrong, this is not the way life should go, if you let that dominate your thought process, then you create pain, fear, sadness, hurt, suffering, where none need be. Because in this work it says, you need do nothing. You do not need to create sadness and a sense of loss and upset or emotional pain as life flows in, through, as, and around you. You do not need to do that. You are free to do that. You have been trained, conditioned, brainwashed into doing that more often than not for most people. And it varies from family to family and culture to culture, but very few people have been trained from the inception of their imprinting with language to view the world as a whole, to view themselves as a consistent, integrated part of the flow of life. Very few people have been trained and conditioned into that. So most of us have been trained and conditioned with a language that's based in separation, with concepts of me different from you and us different from them and this part of my body different from that part. So we've been trained to look for, to label, and to respond to things as though they are separate, and to think in terms of what should be rather than just in direct observation of what is. And so we have been trained to create the pain, the fear, the sadness, the hurt, the resentment that we experience. And it has a lot of momentum behind it. It's well practiced. It's what Guy Finley would call the mechanical level of mind. It just keeps churning and doing what it always does. This work Course in Miracles last year and the Way of Mastery this year is introducing us to the possibility that we can undo that conditioning, that we can build a different conditioned response, one that says, I will stay in joy. I will stay in childlike curiosity. I will learn to extend love in each new present moment. I will learn to value only the loving thoughts. While I watch all kinds of other thoughts move through this energy field that we call the mind, simply because all minds are joined. And so any negative thought that's ever happened might flow through my mind, and I will learn to let it flow and to only value and therefore pour mind energy into and then later share my loving thoughts. That's what this work is nudging us toward. Greater and greater responsibility for where we choose to focus our conscious awareness in each new present moment, because it is the focus of our conscious awareness in each new present moment which creates our experience of life. Lesson 29 is titled, Freedom is Love Under All Conditions. And the text reads, Once again, beloved friends, we join together with you because we remain as committed as you are to discovering ever greater depths of the Creator's presence, ever greater depths of our own presence, ever greater depths of what alone is true always, of what alone is unchanged, unchanging, and unchangeable forever. We would speak unto you in this lesson of that which deepens the understanding of abiding in perfect knowing, in perfect knowledge. We want to address a theme that you've heard before, though from a slightly different perspective. The theme goes by a term that most of us are familiar with, and that term is karma. Karma, as popularly considered, means that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. For everything you put out, a similar energy returns. Now, I have said before that karma can only exist where unconditional loving does not exist. This means that to the degree that your mind has not been purified of fear, the degree to which your mind has not been purified of need, the degree to which the mind has not been purified of its tendency toward idolatry, that is, creating something which is a substitute for love. Another way to say that is mistaking form for content. And wherever any of these things are occurring, that person is indeed experiencing the creation of karma. What do we mean by that? We mean that each time you hold an unloving thought, you are going to experience the fruit of that thought. In reality, there are two levels at which this occurs, or two ways in which it occurs. The first is immediate, and the second one is mediated through the forms of time. Again, think of this as your mind is a field of energy. It is not who you are. It is not your essence. It does not create your value. It does not decrease your value or increase your value the way you use it. You are separate from your mind. Your essence is consciousness. Your essence is soul. Your essence is spirit. Your essence is to be an offspring of the creation, a spark of the divine mind, a spark of the divine light, expressing in form. So the mind is this field of energy through which any thought that has ever been might flow because all minds are joined. So it might be a thought from Hitler or Genghis Khan. It might be a thought from Jesus, or it might be a thought from Buddha, or it might be a thought from Muhammad, or it might be a thought from St. Francis of Assisi or Krishnamurti. So the issue is not what thoughts pass through my mind. The issue that creates my experience is which of those thoughts do I value? Which of those thoughts do I focus my mind energy on and cling to or call them mine? The text goes on and the next section is titled, Unloving Thoughts Alter the Chemical Balance of Your Body. And for more on this, I strongly encourage you to read a book like Bruce Lipton's Biology of Belief. Watch some YouTube videos if you don't like reading that much. Watch some YouTube videos with Greg Braden and Bruce Lipton and others talking about how more and more the science in the last 30, 40 years is making it very clear that what we choose to do with our mind energy is immediately felt in the body. So the text goes on and says, in the first way in which you feel an impact from karma is that the very moment you think an unloving thought, and you're thinking it as you are a physically embodied being, you immediately alter the electrical flow of energy throughout the physical system. You immediately alter the balance of the body, and thereby you experience tightness in the body. Perhaps it's sadness you experience, or depression, or an overall ill-at-ease feeling. For every negative thought, not just the big ones that you really wrap your attention around, but even the small ones, this is still true. Depression can only occur in a mind that has been denying its pathway to joy. Depression, then, is the result of a resistance to the flow of life throughout the body-mind. This resistance occurs in many ways. It can be the result of not feeling a feeling to its completion. In an earlier lesson, they were talking about what is it that you have failed to digest, to process, to accept, to allow, to embrace, to trust? What is it in your life that you try to push away? The resistance can occur in many ways. It can be the result of not feeling a feeling to completion. It can be the result of withholding a simple truth, and, or more often than not, it can be the result of denying the impulse of the heart. As you begin to walk a spiritual path, you realize you need to be open to the guidance of the Holy Spirit. You realize that in fact, you cannot awaken yourself, because if you would or could, you would have done so already. Once you realize this, then the opportunities are presented that contain within them all that you need to awaken from your illusions. However, you resist it because it does not conform to your image of yourself or your thoughts about how life should unfold. From the earlier example, this was your favorite tree to sit under by the side of this river and sit in the shade and have a picnic lunch or go fishing or take pictures of the wildlife that would come visit the tree. And now the tree has fallen into the river and there's no more shade for you to sit under and there's no more favorite place for you to sit and have a picnic or you're bemoaning the fact that there was a squirrel family living in the tree and now their home is ruined. And you create a lot of resistance in the form of judgment and contraction to this event, which is just a flow of life. And it says here, we resist it because it does not fit our image of ourselves or our image of how life should unfold. The text goes on and says, there are many ways in which you can resist and create a blockage in the flow of energy through the system. It is all around some form of a negative thought. And here they want us to know that all negativity is an expression of fear. All attempts to control another or life itself are really fear. And they want us to know that anger is merely a form of fear. So the very moment in which the mind is used to think a negative thought, there is a very immediate karmic effect. Given that effect over a period of time, an illness is created in the body. And then depression is created in the emotional field. The next section is titled, The World Will Mirror Your Thoughts and Beliefs. So this is the second way that a karmic process is experienced. There is a mediated form of a karmic response, namely that the world around you will, over a period of time, coagulate. It will create itself in a context that will mirror to you that which seems to prove the negative thought that by now you've forgotten that you ever created. It's just running in your brain on autopilot, and you've forgotten the fact that it was you or your parents that created it and placed it there. You think this is some universal truth. All politicians are liars and untrustworthy. Every time I let myself get happy about something good happening in my life, bad things are soon to follow. This is just a thought that was dropped into the still clear pool of my awareness, and the pebble just keeps getting dropped. And I think, though, this is just the truth of life because it is so practiced. The text goes on and says, then you'll have the negative thought again and again and again, and you will mistakenly believe that the negative thought is there because of the conditions outside of you. An example would be for someone to see an event occur in life, such as the government raising taxes, and then they say, yes, I've always known that it's that. That's just the way it is. You cannot trust a single politician. And yet, that same person is not seeing that 15 years ago he decided that politicians could not be trusted because he heard it from his father, and he knows in his mind that the politicians will always do something to take more money out of his pocket because that's what his father taught him. Probably because that's what his father experienced at one time and or was told by his father. And then, of course, 15 years later, when taxes are raised, that person's mind says, I knew it. You know, I think it must have always been right all along. You see what they did? This proves that politicians can't be trusted. When in fact, in reality, politicians are merely the manifestation that fulfills the prophecy. So in this way, I want to invite you to look at your life. How are the events that are occurring? How is the quality of life you are living possibly reflecting a self-fulfilling prophecy? In other words, how could it be merely the fulfillment of the karma of how you are using your own mind? Usually in this secondary form of the way karma shows up, the beliefs or thoughts are very, very old and deep in your unconscious. As you go back in time and look at your life, ask the following question, quote, what must I have believed previously for this effect to be showing up right now? Close quotes. For instance, if you have no money, look well at what you have believed about money in the past. Especially look to see where the beliefs about money that your parents held were imprinted on you. This is one of the big things that Dr. Michael Rice used to talk about in one of his many lectures, probably on creating consciously. We have such deeply held beliefs about money. And it is amazing how different these beliefs are from one person to another, from one family to another. And if you want to uncover more and more from the unconscious realm, Dr. Michael Rice here would say, try a mind shifter. A mind shifter in Dr. Rice's work is a tool. It's a statement for which your mind might have a whole bunch of negative responses. And the more you write that statement and let yourself free associate to it, respond to it, see what gets stirred up by it, the more you start to add energy to the hidden parts of your mind that might hold traumatic or well-practiced negative thoughts about money, relationship, family, and you haven't thought of them consciously, maybe for decades, so you can sit down with a mind shifter and start journaling. And the process of the mind shifter is available on the whyagain.org website. But it's targeted journaling. So you sit down with a mind shifter, you write it on one side of the piece of paper, you block out an hour or two where you're going to sit there and do nothing but read this, write it again, respond to it, and write down your responses. And in that way, you're going to stir up things that you probably haven't had conscious awareness of for years, if not decades. And one of them that Dr. Michael Rice uses as an example is, here's a mind shifter, and you write down the statement on the left side of the sheet of paper, I always make twice as much money as I can spend. And then you block out an hour or two of time, and you sit there with a stack of blank papers, and you draw a line halfway down the paper from top to bottom, vertically. And on the left side, you write, I always make twice as much money as I can spend. And on the right side, you write every thought that bubbles up in response to that. That would be a way to deepen the work here in Lesson 29 when you ask, what must I have believed previously for this to be showing up? The mind shifter is a really good way for stirring up and uncovering some of those things we have believed that we were not aware of. The text goes on and says, for indeed, as we have touched on before, each soul, each and every one of us, has dropped into this world through the context of our parents. And there is a context of perception, a context of belief, a context of attitude that we begin to be colored by because we're accepting that coloration into the field of our own energy. We're taking on the values of our parents. We're learning about the world through their life experiences and their conditionings. The text goes on and says, if, for instance, the parents believe that spirituality and material wealth cannot go together, and therefore to be spiritual, it means to do without material goods, then look at your own life and how it has evolved. Do you find a block at receiving money for being of service to others? But there's no block for you to go to a job that you hate and do something you dislike to make your living? The book suggests that we live in that question, beloved friends, and begin to apply it to the whole of our life. As you look at your life, please look at the effects you experience as your surroundings and as your context. Are you alone with no lover or friends? Then take a look at what your beliefs are about living with being alone, being in a relationship, having a lover, having friends. Is it dangerous? Are you deserving of that? Are you not deserving of that? The text says, for somewhere, it is the nature of your thought, the agreements you have made, unconsciously or consciously, about what things mean, and the agreements you've made with your family and the culture in which you've been birthed. It is all of this that has actually generated the energy that is showing up as the effects you experience in your life. The question is, what thoughts or beliefs were you holding within the mind? One common thought might be, quote, oh, I just can't really make it on my own. I need to be taken care of. I don't believe I have what it takes to survive on my own, close quotes. And then 25 years later, you wonder why you feel resentment toward your mate. The resentment is merely the recognition that you thought a negative thought about yourself, then you acted upon it, and you have created the effects of someone who is controlling and who provides you with all of your money. And you think there is a fault in them because you have forgotten to see the pebble that you dropped into the pond of omnipotent creativity, which is the domain of the mind. That field of energy that we call the mind is a pond of omnipotent creativity. Whatever pebbles you throw into it, whatever thoughts you hold there in value, will be amplified, will be part of the creative flow. Last night in the work with Michael Singer, he would call it a vector of creativity. Creation moving in a particular direction because of the mind energy that we hold about it. This text goes on and says, karma then is an effect of how the mind is used. Now I have indeed said that karma can only exist where unconditional loving does not exist. What does this mean? It means that when the mind unconditionally loves, extends love in all circumstances, it loves first itself and it places no conditions upon what it receives as ideas from the universe. There are many in your world that would look up to those who take the greatest chances in life. For example, the actor or the actress who waits on tables in some cheap hamburger stand, sleeps on a park bench, keeps taking acting classes, and finally gets the part and becomes rich and famous. Yet, the one who became rich and famous is the one who received the impulse of a desire to act, and they followed up on it, and they were willing to do whatever it took to be in the context in which something may or may not occur. They had the willingness to take the risk. Such a one is living out, actually living in a state of unconditional love of self. Whether they think about it or not, they are carrying the subtle belief that the universe will somehow arrange itself and will support them to follow their heart. The next section is titled, Karma Does Not Exist in Unconditional Love. In unconditional loving, karma does not exist. The example I have given you is just a rudimentary phase of unconditional loving. In its mature state, in its spiritual state, unconditional loving means that the mind has awakened and seen that nothing that occurs in life can cause it to contain or withdraw its love. That is a statement to write it out, post it on your bathroom mirror. In its mature state, in its spiritual state, the mind knows when it is loving, always extending love. It sees that nothing that occurs in life can cause the mind, the soul, the spark, to either withdraw its love or slow it down, make it smaller, or contain it in any way. In the perfection of constant extension of love in all conditions, or what they call unconditional love, the mind simply extends love. The text reads, karma then cannot be said to exist because that mind is no longer experiencing the effects coming back at it. It has transcended the world of cause and effect, and regardless of what arises, it merely extends love. Who can be imprisoned when they are extending love? So there is a transcendence of karma through unconditional love. And unconditional love is always the fruit of the decision to have the awareness that oneself is love and extend oneself, one's true nature. Not because it's a duty to do so, not because it will make your spouse love you more. You extend love, you see yourself as love, because you finally recognize that you might as well, that's the truth of your life, and that is all. You extend the love that you are to and through your higher self because your creator loved you enough to create that self. There truly are no effects that are occurring as the result of a source of power outside of you. In other words, nothing is being done to you. Nothing. You are free in each and every moment through the power of love, capital L love. You are free to free yourself of what looks like the effects of the world. In truth, you are never at the effect of anything but the illusions of thought and belief that you have learned to project upon the world. Many of you feel somewhat fearful of telling your friends and neighbors that you're reading the Way of Mastery and that it contains guidance from Jesus or Yeshua. That very fear that you feel, that constriction, that is karmic. Somewhere, a long time ago, you decided that following your own pathway must stay concealed, and it is not worth very much. You have decided that no one will agree and that their opinions decide your worth. I would ask you this question. Could there be fear in sharing with your friends that you study lessons on achieving mastery from Jesus of Nazareth? Could there be fear of sharing this if there was no prior belief that the opinions of others have the power to decide whether you are good or bad, worthy or unworthy? If that was not in place, there could not be fear. So, somewhere you have believed that there is a world outside of you whose opinions matter. Where then in your life do you limit your expression of joy, your expression of fun, your expression of simply being alive because you're concerned about the approval of others? Karma is a most interesting concept, and it shows up in many, many ways. So ask yourself, quote, where are the effects I experience in my life that are the result of karmically induced thought, as opposed to thoughts of unconditional self-acceptance? Close quotes. Beloved friends, the fact that you're experiencing yourself as a body-mind is, in many ways, itself karmic. That is, it is the result of the vast expanse of mind to dare to think a tiny mad idea and take it seriously. An idea like, quote, I could separate myself from the love of the Creator and I could create an experience that convinces me that I've succeeded in achieving that separation, close quotes. Yet, unconditional love transforms the experience of the body into something quite different. Unconditional love of capital S self translates the life of the body-mind, the life of paying taxes, the life of keeping your car well-oiled, all of it is translated so that the world becomes not something that proves your unworthiness and your separation, but it becomes rather a medium of communication in which magic, in a sense, is always at play. Miracle-mindedness is always at play. For instance, you go to take your car to fill up your gas tank. Because your heart is open, your mind is open. You're not in resistance to it, and your eyes are open. You look around you, and you feel the energy of somebody at the pump on the other side of the island. Because your heart is open, you go up to them and say, "Well, I'm just here pumping my gas. I looked up and I saw you. You've got a great smile. You've made my whole day. Thank you." And then a conversation is struck up, and it's discovered that they're looking for someone in their corporation who happens to have your skills, and you just happen to be looking for a new job. The things of the world become translated into that which supports your ever-increasing joy, success, fun, pleasure, material improvement, and new friends. It supports all of it when you see it through the eyes of love. Then you literally look at the world around you and finally get it that it never was what you thought it was because you failed to separate yourself from your Creator. Everything you see is there to support you and having a happy experience. You are free to live in your highest joy. You are free to ask for what you want and to open your heart and to extend love. And the universe will respond according to the beliefs you hold about yourself within yourself. Dear friends, karma can be transcended. Look at your life, then, with respect to your karma or the action that is occurring in response to a former action. One of the most powerful things you could ever do is ask yourself this question. What must I have believed is true about the world to be living the life I'm living now? Let that sink in. This book says one of the most powerful things you could ever do is ask this question. Quote, what must I have believed is true about the world to be living the life I'm living now? Close quotes. This is not to say that karma is bad or wrong. It's not. It's simply merely effect, cause and effect. So then ask yourself, where in the effects I'm experiencing now can I bring a greater degree of unconditional loving acceptance? Where am I looking through the eyes of boredom instead of appreciation? Where can I bring a greater depth of unconditional love? Where can I let go of resistance? Where can I give up trying to direct my life and allow the love of the Creator to direct my life? Karma can be transcended by translating it into something else. Karma can become the fulfillment of your purpose, your very way to extend and teach only love. For when you see that the effects, called your life, are the result of limited, fearful, negative thoughts or beliefs that you've held about yourself and about the world, when you see that, you can embrace the effects you have created and see them in a new light. You might choose to think, quote, I choose to allow these very conditions to be the conditions under which I now choose to learn to extend love. What can I appreciate in this moment? What can I give forgiveness unto? In other words, what false perceptions can I dismantle in this moment? Where can I overcome fear of speaking out and share a truth with a friend? What have I been avoiding that I can now embrace? In that very means, any set of conditions created as the effect of fear-based thinking now becomes the very pathway that will lead me to understand and transcend the negative thinking and enter a domain of the use of the mind that will create effects far more enjoyable, far more expansive than I have ever imagined. Do not then lament your life as it is, for it is absolutely perfect. Each set of conditions contains within it everything you need to translate your life into that which expresses your love of your Creator. Never lament what you create. Never lament what you experience. Never judge yourself and say, oh man, why did I do that? I should have done this other thing. Just don't do that. Appreciate what you have created. Find what can be appreciated within it. Wrap the arms of your love around it. Bring unconditional love to it, and thereby you will find a window or a doorway to the creation of a new use of the mind. And that new use of the mind must necessarily require the universe to rearrange itself to accommodate the new vibration. Remember, your focus of your mind energy is a creative force. The universe must respond. Appreciation and love and unlimitedness require that the universe show up in a different way. In other words, karma is not your prison. Bringing your attention to the effects that you create is a pathway to great freedom. What you did in the past to create the effects that you no longer want was not a sin or a mistake. It was merely a free choice in order to create experience. Fine, you've been there. You've done that. Now, bring love and appreciation to the very effects that you may be judging. For example, oh man, why did I buy that stock? That was so silly. I just didn't get enough information, and now the company's gone bankrupt, and I lost $10,000. Well, let me be an appreciation of this very effect. Well, this is fantastic. I created an experience for myself, and I can do more of this. This is great. I love myself so much, I think I'll decide to do it differently. I just learned a valuable lesson. Next time, I'll get more information. I think I'd like another opportunity for a great stock to make money. Yep, that's it. I'm going to become an expert at this. I can see it coming through my unconditional love. Yep, that's the ticket. In fact, every time you think you have failed, celebrate. Celebrate your so-called failure as though it were a success. For remember, it is up to you to decide what you will perceive. Events are just neutral. Therefore, you're free to celebrate what you call your failures. When you celebrate them, they are your successes. Any successful person knows that they never fail. They merely learn and become wiser. Become one who is no longer at the effect of karma. Become a person who uses karma wisely by looking honestly at their life. Learning what needs to be learned, accepting it, allowing it, surrendering, and celebrating it. Become one who translates their karma into the doorway to an ever-increasing awareness of the Creator's presence and the Creator's perfect love as it is spread across the face of the earth. As that happens, it permeates everything you see, translating the world into the very means that can uplift you, awaken you, care for you, and heal you. Beloved friends, again we ask that you truly study well the theme of this lesson, and that you spend time with the questions that have been given unto you. For in the way of knowing, the mind that abides in a perfectly liberated state knows and experiences that the world of effects that the mind is experiencing contain within it the very secrets to an ever-increasing delight in the presence of the Creator's love. There is no such thing as failure. There is only ongoing success as life evolves from good to better to best, as the mind learns to be the presence of love. Freedom is love under all conditions. And with that, peace be unto you always. Amen. Well, that takes us right up to the exhaustion of our time. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you. Have a good day.
You too. Blessings.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, November the 16th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1. That puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I hope we had a couple callers with their hands up yesterday, but we had run out of time, so hopefully they will call back in and press 1, and we'll get to them. I did get a response again from the gentleman that Michael had talked to last week. I'll wait till Michael gets on to read that back to him. And in the meantime, I invite you, I'm attempting to open up my email so I can read it to you at the same time. So I invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org, and just look around, click on buttons, see what's new. We've got a lot of things out there. Still got some changes to be made, so hang in there with us. And if you see something that doesn't work, please let me know. Drop me a text or an email and just say this is the URL and it didn't go anywhere or whatever, and we will work on getting that fixed. And let me check and see if Michael's having challenges getting on. And check on the app. If you haven't downloaded it to your phone or if you haven't updated lately, we have updated, let's see, the last one was including the comments where on any page within the app you can click and ask a question. And so that was the latest change, and that was in May, June, whenever it was. Time just slips by anymore. It seems like the days just go by so fast. But anyway, download the app and put it to work in your life. We've got a couple of new phone numbers on the switchboard. We've got some new people in the chat room. We welcome you to the show. This is Mindshifters Radio, and it is about changing, shifting your mind and looking at the world differently. So we appreciate you being here with us. And if you have any questions, please press 1. Okay, Michael's not in with us yet. So if you have a comment or a question for me, press 1. I'll be glad to talk to you until he gets on the phone with us. And let's see, what do we have coming up this week? On the second and the fourth Thursday, so that's next week, not this week. And we'll have to find out because I know that there are a lot of people from a lot of countries that are on the Global Book Club that meets the second and the fourth Thursday of every month. But since Thursday's Thanksgiving, we'll have to find out if that's a holiday for everybody, if we're going to still have the club on that day or not. But so that the book club is the second and fourth Thursday. The second Saturday of each month, we have Stillpoint Breathing. So the next one is going to be on December the 10th. So if you're interested in being part of that, then please let us know. Drop a line to Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And let us know if you want to be part of it. We'll get you set up and get you started. And I had a hand go up, so I'm going to go ahead and press 770. You're on the air. Who do I have? 770, you're on.
Hello. Can
well,
you hear
hello.
Me, folks?
I can hear you. How are you?
Wonderful, Jeannie. Great. Thank you. How are you?
I am doing well. It's really cold here today. A while ago, Michael asked what the temperature was and opened up the app, and it was 40. And before I could even say 40, I said, no, it's 39. 38, 37. I don't think I've ever seen it drop that quick. It's 37 degrees right now. It's pretty chilly. How are you doing?
We're about 34, and ever since I spoke with Michael late last week, we have been cold, down to 20 at night, and sometimes not even out of the 30s, and today's going to be a day it's going to struggle to get out also.
Yeah, we're supposed to be down to 24 tonight. I was out working in the garden this morning to try and get the whole garden mulched so that when it hits us 24 tonight, I think later in the week's going down to 14 one night. So I know how you feel.
Yes, a little chilly. A little early for that here, the folks tell me.
It is. Actually, I've only actually been at Heartland this late in the season. Up in a couple of years, I stayed through Christmas, and it was pretty much barefoot and T-shirt weather, just right up till almost the beginning of January. It was kind of the norm. So,
yeah, that's what they tell me. Just as this is January, February weather right now, this week, it's not going to break until maybe Monday. So, you doing well, my friend?
We're rocking. My feet are cold. I was out mulching. I've gone out and collected several contractor-sized bags of leaves and grass to mulch the garden with and hadn't gotten to it. So I was out this morning mulching
it
up
nice
so we can protect it for this cold. Oh, yes, for sure.
Speaking of gardens, I'm a little fragmented. There's so much happening, and I heard several things I just wanted to call in and check on. One was a soil building course. Was that Zach Bush's that you mentioned back a show two, three ago, or is that something different?
No, actually, there's a woman that's a student friend of ours, Carrie Lee, and she works with a company that puts land into preserves for heritage preserves. Mm-hmm. And she's also writing legislation for soil for the state she works in. Not too much information here. In any event, she had contacted me, and it's a course that she has worked with and asked me to participate in or invited me to. So.
Wonderful. Can you share that information, or is it...
I can. Oh, no. Okay. It's expensive. It's like a $300 course. And she felt it was important enough, and we've been conversing about soil for years. And so she felt it was important enough that she volunteered to pick up half the cost of the course for us. So it's a donation.
Wonderful.
But I'll send you a link to it.
Yeah, I'd just like to keep it in mind, probably something I won't do real quick, but it's nice to know other options, for sure. And
I'm just looking, let's see if I've got something with the, let's see if I've got the name of it here, if I can come up with it. Give me a second here.
Sure.
Not funny, but I'll get the information to you.
Oh, yes. That'd be great. That'd be great. And I listened last week, and I want to thank you for your kind words, you and Jeannie, kind words concerning me and the work. That was quite nice to hear. And also, we had talked about Magda being a wonderful influence for me and resource. And also want to mention Julie Haverstick here and Grady.
Yes.
Have been wonderful blessings for me and continuing to be as I move along in this work. I had a brief moment talk with Dr. Tim yesterday, and just really things are beginning to move together, and for me. I'm just really appreciative of all the folks that have, especially the three folks on this end that have, you know, besides you all, of course, have really helped me move along. So just wanted to mention that.
Sweet. Well, we're delighted to be here and plan to continue, sir.
Yes, I plan to continue at some point with you all. And yes, as you had mentioned, the universe just works. It's so marvelous how things come together. I think it was 3, 4, 5 days ago. I've kind of lost track of time these last few weeks. I was just searching for something to listen to as I was working along, and I came across your Father's Day video. 31 minutes, I think it was. And
yeah, that's an important one.
The next time, sir?
I say that's an important one.
Oh, wow. I was moved off the chair. And it was wonderful. It really was. And I listened to it 3 times. And I'll probably listen to it 30 times more. So the amazing thing was the next time I listened to the show or a day or two after, you were talking about that video, I think, with the man from overseas.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it was mere coincidence.
So I wanted to bring that up for the folks again. If they have not seen that one, wow.
Yeah, and they can find it if you go to our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and type in Michael Rice, 2 words, R-Y-C-E, and you'll find in the list the Father's Day presentation. And, you know, the gist of it is that when they said, honor thy father and thy mother, and it sounds like some kind of a religious dictate, it is one of the most powerful healing tools in the world if you got the brain cells for what they were talking about from the Aramaic. If you tie it together with the whole idea of the power person dynamic, and if your parent especially, I mean, this quote-unquote commandment is 1,000 times more important if your parents were abusive, alcoholic, absent, what have you. It's such a key to healing. And I've had people, I can remember one man that was at Heartland who was so traumatized over his relationship with his mother. And he had become a tough guy, military man. His braggadocio was about he was the best killer in his unit, and he was the best at training people to kill the enemy. That was like his life thing. And in a still point session, he was there for a whole summer, and I think it was the 3rd or 4th still point session of the summer. He touched into the core memory of what his mother had done when he was an infant. And, I mean, this big, tough guy, I mean, I could tie both his hands behind his back and tie his feet together, and he'd still beat me up, without question.
Mm-hmm.
And when he touched into that memory, I mean, he still hasn't told me what the memory was. He could not talk about it. He could not even gore. It was that devastating. And he just, it was like so devastating that he's like, no, I don't want to have love toward her. It's like, but you got to remember, if you can honor, which means bring love into action toward her, that energy has to go through you. You get the original. You get to heal that. If you don't ever do that, you hang out with that trauma in your tissues. You know, I mean, it's just like, and there's so much in the scriptures. It's just, that's just the way it is. It's, here's how it works, but it's been turned into something that, well, just turned into something that wasn't.
Yeah.
That's a major piece of the puzzle.
Yes.
Are you on our mailing list, Michael? Did you get the newsletter with the, did you get our newsletter with a healing course in it?
I did, and Michael, that that is in a file. I have not gotten to it yet. I have not forgotten about it.
That's cool.
It's marked down. I understand. I know you've been talking about that course, and that is something that is available now. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was in our last newsletter, and if you haven't gotten it,
so cool.
Resend it. But
no, sir. No, I have it. I have it.
Good. Good.
Yeah, I have it. It's just not something I've dug into. I haven't even.
Sure.
It's in a file to be reviewed. So,
right. Well, I wasn't sure when you brought it up if you had found, and that's one of the early links in that course on healing as a key. In fact, there's a significant part of the course, the opening of it, that talks about, you know, makes a comparison of, gee, we all know that if the input to your computer, i.e. your modem or your internet signal are poor, your computer's never going to function properly. And then the metaphor being the early inputs from our parents or those who acted as parents, this is a big piece and that comes out of the Laws of Living class, if those inputs aren't solid, a person can never function properly. Just can't do it without those original relationships being either based in love as they were designed to be or repaired, the work done around to clean it up. Because it's like the modem. It's the original energetic input to the whole system. And if it's awry and it's just a genius piece of work, to, you know, I find it interesting every time I talk about this, think about this, is that, you know, there's a condition. They ask Yeshua the question, you know, what's most important in the law? And he says, you got to have rachma. He doesn't say love your neighbor, love God. He says, you got to have rachma. And that's how you maintain your human life. But there's just that one group of people, parents, that it has to go to another level. It isn't about loving your parents. It isn't about rachma for your parents. It's bringing rachma, bringing love present to that relationship, and then having that energy pass through your field, where if there are any power person dynamics, it will begin the healing process as you pass it through to them. So it's just...
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't sure whether you ran into that independently or you were at that stage in the course. So anyway, when you run into it, you'll see the whole conversation there. And it just, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, thank you. No, I haven't gotten into the newsletter yet, so forgive me for that. But it's in the plan. And it's.
I will never forgive you. I will never forgive you.
That's right. It may be a little while longer before I get it, but I'm going to get it.
I understand you got a lot on your plate right now. It's a big journey that you're doing. So,
yeah, it's interesting how from a young child that many of us are taught to honor thy father and mother, and never made sense to me, and you know, lived through the years. But what did make sense to me is it felt right in my gut. That's from a young child. I just felt that's the right thing to do. But the dynamics behind it, never understood that till I came to
realize it's such a powerful key to healing. It's
That's amazing. I didn't understand those dynamics any more than I understood cancel goals. But that's coming.
Right.
That's all coming together a little bit now. And you know, from the Western mind, as we're taught. It doesn't make sense. And cancel goals. Well, what do I want to do that for? You know, it's first thought that was in my head. So
that
I'm sure
single
that has
piece
lot to do with our training.
Yeah, that single piece of information. It took me 35 years to decipher and understand from the Aramaic. I didn't understand that until about 10 years ago. The why of it. I mean, I taught it for decades. I taught the canceling of the goal because it works. You know, people, when I first ran into that idea from the Aramaic, as you say, it didn't mean anything to me in the context of my training. It's like, yeah, it sounds just a little ridiculous. But every once in a while in one of my classes, I'd bring it up. And over a period of time, I'd have people come back to me saying, you know, I've been doing that canceling goal. That's really powerful. I said, really? Okay. And that's when I started to pay attention. And then it became literally my full-time, you know, focal point was that. And 35 years to understand why and how and the impact of canceling a goal. the whole understanding of the mind, and I certainly can relate to the Greeks not having a clue as to why you do such a silly thing, and so turn forgiveness into I'll let you off the hook for this that's moving inside of me. I understand fully how it happened, and the brain loss is so deep that it's about me letting you off the hook. That. It's a tough one to crack in the mind.
Yes,
but we're getting
I don't fully have it, but I got a little glimpse of it. It's coming, and I can just mention that I am so appreciative, and I know many others are. But you stood in the gap there eight, nine years ago, and the many that preceded that to grasp that download for us and pass it on. So that's just a marvelous information.
Marvelous. Well, and it's more completely explained in the healing course too.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll ground itself on another level as you go through that.
Oh, wonderful. That's exciting. Exciting to know. I want to mention one more thing before we. I know there's other callers also, and there was a show here within the last few days. I listened to your show, and you had mentioned Kathmandu, and I'm not sure if that's where the man was from that was writing in or not, but I wanted to just share with you and the folks. I've been there. And I've been to Manipa and Kathmandu and trekked for weeks in the foothills of the Himalayas. We went over from India when I was there. It was about 11 years ago. And Nepal, India is beautiful, yes, and every place is just so beautiful. But in my heart, Norway and Nepal hold just a special place amazing beauty, and it was. I just wanted to throw that out to you and the folks, and just it's amazing, amazing place, and breathtaking for certain.
Did you make it to Tibet when you were in India?
No.
No,
did not.
Tibet was
so
the
much
place
more
that struck me. I didn't make it to Nepal, but started out in northern India and then down into the Kulu Valley and down into Dharamshala, but spent a week in Tibet, and that was just awesome.
Wow, I can't imagine, because I was in the northeastern part for quite a while of India before we crossed over to Nepal in Darjeeling. Did you go through Darjeeling when you took that route?
Yes.
Yeah, that was, that's as far north as I went I wasn't alone, that we went in India. And Darjeeling's a very interesting, neat city. It's a very, very neat marketplaces and beautiful.
I did not get to see much of it.
Yeah,
it is, for sure.
Passing through. Just out of curiosity, how far north of there did you go, roughly?
Let's see. I'm trying to think of the town we started out in. It was way up north. Actually, we were set up. There was a man there who was 113 years of age. He was a teacher who did a thing called Kaya Kalpa, an ancient Ayurvedic medical process. And we had arranged, I had taken a couple of other people with me and arranged for him to meet with us. He had never been out of his home in southern India, and he agreed to come up. It was the Kulu Valley, I'm thinking. Anyway, he had agreed to come up and work with us there, but it was so cold. He was small and frail. Last time I heard, through the student who connected me with him. He was still alive and rocking. That's probably about 5 years ago, which would make him something in the range of 130. But he was going on this, but it was so cold and they didn't have reliable electricity. The electricity might be on 2 hours in the morning, an hour in the afternoon, and then you wouldn't see it until the next night. That sort of thing, and it was just cold. I mean, we were literally sleeping four in a bed to stay warm. I mean, we just jammed together because it was so cold. And but on our way back, you know, it was predicted to warm up, but it never did. So we took a train back down to southern India, and this man at 113 carried his own bags, took care of himself. You know, he was just amazing.
Well, when we come back from a trip like those, we're so grateful for electricity and heaters and things of that nature.
Oh, you're not kidding.
So
big
many.
Time.
I mean, even places like Honduras, Guatemala, I mean, a decade ago when I was doing a lot of that travel, they still had times of the day they didn't have electricity. You got to plan. You got to plan life a little bit more than we do here in the Western world in this country. And you brought back interesting memories of Darjeeling. It was cold there, and a highlight of the day after we'd be teaching is get the wood fires going and heat up water so we can put it in any kind of bottle that we could find. And put it in bed.
Take the bed with you.
Take it to bed.
Well, hey, I appreciate that electricity when I go out and work in the garden on a cold morning like today and come back in and there's heat.
Yeah. That's for sure.
For sure.
That is so beautiful a memory. So, well, nice to talk with you about that. And you brought back memories to me when you brought that up. And that is... Neat place to be. Very, very different, but beautiful.
Sweet. Well, any other questions around the worksheet process or any of the tools before we move on from our conversation?
Well, Michael, I really do. I've got a long list, but I'm going to have to
move along for
today. No, I can't today, my friend. I got to schedule I got to keep on, but I've got things marked down, and I'd like to settle in and then, you know, be able to nicely chat more and
all right, sweet,
and learn. So,
all right, sir, we appreciate
good.
You.
Appreciate you all too. Thank you, and nice to speak with y'all today. Have a great week. We'll talk soon.
All right. Blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
Blessings. Bye.
All right, Machini.
So our call-in number is 563-999-3581 and press 1, and that will put you into queue. And we had someone earlier in the chat room, and they said, I'm a first-time listener. I'm going through hell, and life is kicking my backside. But before I could respond to them, they hung up. So they're not in there any longer. Maybe they're listening on another station or something, but they're not in the chat room any longer.
Okay. Well, one of the challenges with doing this work that I recognize when people first start is just staying around long enough to start to shift the way the mind perceives, the way the mind works. You know, just staying around long enough to build the brain cells to get that initial flip into, oh, that's what you're talking about. You know, it's the same challenge as it was 2,000 years ago. You hear Yeshua saying, those who, having been given eyes, do not perceive. Those who, having ears, do not hear. And it's the same thing. It's like until the brain cells are there, until the brain cells are built, the mind can't generate a reality that approximates something other than what its own content is. So if the life experience and the generational content is based in hostility or fear, a conversation with love, about love, I mean about actual love, as opposed to the culture's, you know, definitions out of hostility and fear of love, to build the brain cells for the possibility and what it takes and what needs to be undone, it just takes time for the mind to be able to reconstruct that in a way that somebody goes, oh, that's what it means. So it is a process, and people come and go, and I've seen it take 10 years before somebody comes back and goes, you know, says, oh, what was that you said? And they're ready to hear it. So we're delighted that you're here to have this conversation with us. And if you have any questions, thoughts, answers, ideas, we'd love to hear your voice. And as Jean said, if you're on one of those stations where we can't – oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I did get an email back from Solly, the person that had sent in the question a few days back. And I'd sent them all the links and everything and the link to the show. And he wrote back and said, thank you so much. I would love to talk sometime. I listened to the show, and I'm going to be digging into the link. You all are the best.
Smoke and mirrors, projection. Sounds like Solly's ready, so we'll hope we'll hear more from him and get to share more of these tools with him. You know, to me, that's the key to it all is there are lots of nice philosophies. There are churches you can go to and be inspired and listen to wonderful things that are said and the possibilities, but how do you get there? And that's what is in the Aramaic that didn't make it into the Greek is the how-to. And I certainly understand that because it's not Dr. Feelgood to start to dig into a past filled with rage and guilt and grief and fear and pain and trauma and drama and generational abuse. It's not Dr. Feelgood. And so I certainly understand why it oftentimes becomes just a belief system about, oh, well, you know, everything will be okay, and you don't have to do anything. You're actually just a sinner. You can't do anything. And the whole teaching and the whole understanding of what our part in the process is has been voided. It's in the Aramaic. It's so clear, but disappeared when it came into the Greek. And I certainly understand why the average person you look at, you know, 2,000 years ago, 1900, 18, 17, 1600 years ago, what kinds of things were going on in the world between countries and people's lives. And what, in order to understand correctly what was being spoken of, each individual had to work through in the way of trauma. I understand why it's moved farther and farther away from here's what you have to do into some kind of a belief system about some magic guy is going to fix it for you. As opposed to there's work to be done. And yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, you look at that passage where they ask Yeshua, you know, what's most important in the law? And how do we connect to, how do we, in essence, make the Creator happy? And he gives him the answer, and half of his disciples in that particular instance shook their heads, turned away, and never came back. And the words they used were, too hard a saying. When we tell people that ultimately you have to go in and look at the deepest hatred and fear and terrorism and traumatic instances and traumatic events in your bloodline, for most people, that's just too hard a saying. And it seems impossible, but it's not impossible. It's totally, completely possible, not only possible, but doable, inevitable. And that's what these tools are about. We're here to decode that. You know, I've spent 50 years developing this work. Not many people are going to put a full-time life into doing that. And so we're here to shortcut the process for you. that you don't have to go figure it out for yourself and decode the tools. When I look back at the different educational processes I went through in order to have the brain cells to recognize what was being said. You know, there's got to be a certain level of understanding of physics. There's got to be a certain level of understanding of psychology. There's got to be a certain level of understanding of quantum mechanics in order to put together what this physicist 2,000 years ago told people they had to do to heal. And sadly, they turned him into a figure to worship rather than a teacher to follow and follow the instructions to produce the result. So what I've spent the last specifically 40 years of the 50 years I've been developing this work is decoding from the Aramaic language, getting it into English so it made sense. And to assure people that literally, absolutely everything that's based in trauma is forgivable. And forgivable doesn't mean that you can let somebody off the hook for what they did. It means it is removable from your mind, from your nervous system, from your body, from your psychology, and from your relationships. Those things are removable. But it's a process that takes time. And you have to hang around long enough to build the brain cells for doing it. So if you're out there in listener land and we can support you, do you have something to share, a question, push one. Let's have a conversation. Call-in number, again, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, 563-999-3581.
You have two hands up.
Well, let's say hello to one of them.
The first one is 828. I believe it's Magda.
Hi there. It is Magda indeed. Hello, my friends.
Hey there, dear heart. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. I'm in, you know, as you know, I'm in tomato heaven here. And we're finally getting down toward the end, the last, you know, like 8 pounds. Whatever it is. Anyhow, I know you have someone else wanting to get on the line, so I will make this really short. I heard today, just a little while ago, and a few days ago as well, I think I would say that you were cautioning people that it can take a long, long time before you really understand the work. I'm paraphrasing. I hope I'm getting that okay. I also, what I would like to interject here is you don't really need to understand it completely and deeply and thoroughly before you see the results.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good point. You're right on track.
Yeah, because, I mean, it does take a long time to really get it at a deeper level. And doing the worksheet, doing the other wonderful tools that you have, and especially the worksheet, things happen. And that is why after meeting you and Jeannie in Asheville and hearing you speak a couple of hours, I decided, yeah, I need more of this, because I took that worksheet home and I did it. And I remember the first time that I had the experience of not having a difficult time sleeping. And I knew something was bothering me. I didn't know what it was. So I thought, well, let's try this. And I got up, sat in front of the worksheet, and just waited. And then, oh, sure enough, a little irritation from the earlier part of the day came up when I was in a store, grocery store, checking
right.
out whatever. And there was this cashier was being very rude. And I thought that was my judgment about her, and so I thought, okay, I'll do the worksheet on this and see. And I was amazed at when I really sat quietly and listened to my inner voice and my feelings. I got how upset I was about that, and then by by the time I got down to the bottom of the worksheet, my attitude, my feelings had changed completely. It was like this little super miracle.
Yep.
It was because I released my judgment about her and my goal for to act differently toward me. And what a difference it made. So what I'm saying is, just use the stuff, use the tools, and as you go along the way, eventually you will learn more and more and more about how to understand the process.
Excellent point.
Okay.
There's nothing to believe.
Uh-huh.
Say again?
I want people to feel excited about the possibilities rather
yes.
than read, perhaps, about the length of time it could take.
Right, right. Yeah, you're right on track, and I need to integrate that point more, that, you know, there's really nothing to believe and really nothing to understand. If you just do the process works, that's all. You know, it's like,
yeah.
It's kind of like getting on a horse. You don't have to know anything about the horse. If you just get your foot in the stirrup and you get on the saddle and the horse goes, you're on a horse and you're riding. You don't have to know or believe anything. It's the same with this tool. It's certainly,
yeah.
There are levels and layers that take time to get to, but yeah, it's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is indeed. It is. It's just a gift, such a gift that you have put together based upon the teachings. And so thank you, thank you, thank you. And I want to get off the air so this other person can get on.
Well, actually, I have a question before you get off the air, if you've got a moment for one.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah, so I was listening to your speaking, and what I heard you say, if I'm correct, was you know, that something had happened in the store and you were upset about that. I maybe don't quite understand, but is it possible to be upset about something? Is that even possible? I mean, something outside of us can really upset? Really? I'm going to have to look into that and do some research. I didn't know that was possible, but I'll check.
It was her fault. It was her fault. She made it.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. We appreciate you a lot.
Oh, you too. Okay. I'm going to
listen. Okay, dear heart. All right.
Blessings.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Awesome. So the next number is 904. I believe it's Dusty. Hi. Welcome.
Well, thank you. And howdy, everybody.
Hey there, good sir. Welcome.
Well,
aloha.
I'm really glad. Aloha. Big ha, ha, ha to you, especially for something you said yesterday, which was really, what can I say? It lit a fire under a memory I had that I had. Well, I hadn't completely forgot about this little miracle that happened in my life, but I never think of it. It's been years. And yesterday you said something, Michael, I think along the lines that you'd had a mystical, I think you referred to it as a mystical experience where you had a sense of knowing, direct knowing. Is that true?
Right, right, yep.
Okay. Well, that kicked loose in me. This thing that I spent all the rest of yesterday, including my meditation, around this thing that happened in my life, and I would love to tell you this story that will help me just have someone hear it, people hear it. That Mike could relate or not, but at any rate, and I thank you, first of all, I thank you for being so candid about that yesterday. It was beautiful, you were. But it was, I think it was just from late 69, and I was going to get married. And
Ryan?
I'm in Atlanta area. I had nothing to bring to the table in terms of worldly goods or position or anything. I basically had the clothes on my back and a just a tremendous amount of inner things going on, which is where she and I connected anyway. But I didn't have a dowry and I hadn't just got my captain. Anyway, so I knew that what I needed to do was bring something very significant to the table, and it was very easy because I looked inside me and I thought, well, if I can upgrade my spirituality, my consciousness, my something along these lines, that will be very powerful and that will be exactly what we need that I can bring to the table. So on the Appalachian Trail, there's this, they call it a mountain. It looked like, I'm from out west, it looked like just a little hill to me, but nonetheless, it was the tallest point. It's called Blood Mountain. And on top of Blood Mountain was a rock, I mean a big rock, about the size of a small apartment, and it was flat on top. And I initially went up there with 2 or 3 people. My idea, Michael, was to, I was going to get on top of this rock and meditate on the spirit or the love or just all the inner oomph, and I was not going to come off that rock, period, until it happened, whatever it was.
20 days and 40 nights, eh?
yeah, it was just about, it actually turned out to be 10 days. And initially, I had 2, 3, 4 people with me, and they made sure I had some food right there. And evidently, I had a lot of water stashed on top of the rock. And except for maybe a slit latrine right next to the rock, I never came off that rock. I would not leave the top of that rock. That's it. And, after a few days, after everybody else left, I could feel this sort of a slight glowing presence starting, but I wasn't where I wanted to be. And on the 10th day, I could feel myself, I was just felt in the center of a golden, like, orb of just presence, kind of an omnipresent or kind of an omniscience, actually, in that case. And I was just being blessed with this. I look at these things as gifts, you know, I mean, it was really a gift. I was just getting into that, and all of a sudden this gentleman appeared, and there was a town about 3 or 4 miles away, and they had heard about this guy that was sitting on top of Blood Mountain for days or something, and he was a preacher, you know, and he was, in his way, he was very dedicated to God, and evidently the spirit moved him, and he hiked the 3 or 4 miles through the woods, undoubtedly he knew the trails, and up the mountain, and he got to the right to the bottom of the rock, and we greeted just about the time this sense of I don't know how to describe that. I don't know how a person describes this, but it's sort of like being in the middle of a field of just pure loving energy that's just full of soft luminance. And he came up and he'd heard about whatever, and he wanted to know what it was. And this fellow asked me all these questions, ecumenical questions, spiritual questions, whatever. And just like you in that moment you had, I absolutely knew the answer to everything he asked. It was just there for me to pluck out of the energy field.
Yep, that's it exactly.
isn't that a wonderful feeling?
It was awesome. Yeah, just.
Well, I so appreciated that you said that because I've had a chance to relive to a certain degree that sense of presence. And I mean, it was 10 days but it happened. What I went up there to do was happening in this moment. And I mean, no matter what, I was surprised because no matter what this guy asked, the answer would just come out of my mouth. I mean, things that I should, you know how it is. So, so I have, anyways, he went back and I went back. But it was when you mentioned this thing for you yesterday, it kicked this thing loose for me. And I have found this to be cycling through my consciousness, just pretty, or actually kind of staying present in a certain way, continuously to some degree. And it feels like, just like then where I wanted to be, to be kicked up to another level of awareness or consciousness or something like that. It feels like that has helped kickstart something as of your comment yesterday of somewhat of the same thing now, kind of a renewal, if you will, and an upgrade. And so anyways, I wanted to share that, and I thought if I talked about it, it would perhaps be clearer, and I'm really glad I got
strength
hold
it on
of
another
it.
Level.
Yeah, and I wonder if you have any feedback on that or not. Or
well, one of the things that you've heard me say 100 times probably, and to me, it is my way of summing up that result or that experience, and that is, in order to heal, you got to be out of your mind. And what I hear you describing, what I hear you describing is that 10 days took you out of your mind.
Yeah.
And for me, as the class I was doing that night that preceded that mystical, what I call a mystical experience, I was being taught something I had no idea about. I mean, I presented it to the class. It came through me. Didn't come from me. I didn't know that information about healing the existent cellular level and then, or doing medicine of some kind, doing some kind of a process or treatment to change the existent physical structure, but then that the real healing lie in changing the energetic pattern that produced the structure in the first place, the genes. And I can see that what that did is it got me out of my mind. And, you know, I got home after that, and I wanted to write all that down so I could get it in my mind. As I said yesterday, I thought I'd written pages. That was my comprehension of it. But when I went back, when I got back to my normal state, when I got back into my mind, it's like I'd only written a few lines. And
of course.
Bingo, I was cast out of my own mind, and that's where, I mean, it didn't matter what the question was, and I was shown, like, in spades what the answer was, it was explained to me by what I can only describe as a silent voice. You know, there was no voice talking in my ear. There was nothing vibrating my eardrums, but there was a total explanation of every question that I asked. And,
right, a direct kind of a direct knowing, correct?
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
Yes.
One other time I had that experience. Actually, several times I've had it in miniature compared to that, but there was one other time where I had it as dramatically as that, and that was during my daughter's birth, or as a result of my daughter being born. I got to catch her. She was born at home, and when she opened her eyes, and, you know, we're told that by the medical people that the child can't focus their eyes for the first several days. Well, her eyes were laser focused in my eyes. She smiled. She grinned at me. And this is like she isn't even fully delivered yet. And I recognized that what happened was it drove me out of my mind again. It was just, I had no mind. I had a class that night. You know, I had a classroom in my home in Atlanta, and it was a Friday afternoon. It was like, I can remember precisely because it was 2:40. It was 2:40 in the afternoon, and we realized my wife was in labor, and at 3:40, my daughter was born. At 7 o'clock, I had people showing up at the door for a class, and some of them were coming from South Florida to Atlanta, and that was before cell phones. There was no way I could contact and say, oh, well, we're not having a class tonight. My daughter was just born, and I greeted them with my daughter in my arm. And they were like, no, she wasn't born at 4:40. Come on, it's 7 o'clock. You've got to be kidding. No, that's when she was born. And I went down to speak to present the material I had to present for the weekend workshop, and I couldn't think a thought. I mean, I was out of my mind.
Yes.
And the only way I can describe it, the way I've learned to describe it since then, with that particular one where I was called upon to provide information that I had committed to providing in a class, it was a 23-hour weekend lecture, the only way I could describe it is it was as if my brain and my mouth were buttered. And it just was like direct transmission. It was just like there was nothing in between the information coming in and going out of my mouth. There was no intellectual process. There was no thinking about it. There was no, let me see now. What am I going to say next? It was just direct transmission.
Wow. Yes.
And
what a beautiful space to be in. And I appreciate you sharing that because that's very powerful. And I would say that one reason I hadn't remembered this, and I hope this is heard in the context that I mean it, but I've been blessed this life with a lot of these kind of mystical experiences for whatever reason. And it's just been ongoing. It's only been about 7 or 8 years ago that I finally went, oh, wait a minute. Wow. Go back and look at these. These are amazing. I mean, who was that guy, you know? And I wondered why I hadn't really, you know, I just took it for granted. Oh, yeah, sure, this stuff happens to me. Hello. And I'd go on my merry way, and then something like that would happen again. And the only conclusion I come to is that's my nature. it is that. Different people have different
the truth
kinds
about
of
who we are.
Yeah, and boy. But you try to tell that to most, I don't even try to tell that to anybody because, you know, they just roll their eyes, you know, but I know you understand.
Well, it makes perfect sense. When you hear Yeshua, and this is the conversation he's having, the same one you and I are having, and he says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. That self that we think of as normal, that is a product of our mind and our mental consciousness, has got to go. And that's when real life comes into physiology. And you can't get that from the mind. You can only get it when you're out of your mind. So, you know, and there's so many different ways of doing it. And to me, one of the key tools, the reason why I've dedicated my life to forgiveness, is because it's the only consistent, persistent way that I know that people can collapse what's going on in their minds on a deep enough and a regular enough basis, on a consistent, persistent basis, that the mind finally starts to shut up. And you're out of your
and
mind.
That's what makes And that's what makes this show, so beautiful, is that you start with love and you end with love. It's about that. And, I mean, in my words.
The key to all of it, for sure.
And again, it's not the cultural level. I love my bank or I love my, you know, only my genetic affiliates. No, you just love. You try to be love, I guess, or are love.
It's what you are. It's literally what we, it's the essence of our true nature. And we live in a culture whose specialty is to knock the awareness of that out of us and then teach us to go out and, you know, 30 years later, they're going to send us out to find somebody to love or somebody to love us as though it was something we could do to each other, we could get from each other. And, you know, it's a whole false world that needs to go in order for us to truly live as the human beings that we are.
Right. And I know you've got the show's ending, so, but I want to say, I just want to declare so it can be heard that I thank you, Holy Spirit, or by any name, for this life and these experiences and the truth of things.
I'm with you on that, friend. You know, Thanksgiving Day is coming up, and it's an appropriate time for appreciation for what we have.
Okay. Well, mahalo.
Electricity's nice. Electricity's nice, but being is a whole lot better.
Being is a whole lot better. That's right. Yeah. Honest to God.
All right. Mahalo. Have a blessed one.